Welcome to the second episode in a new series of Directions on Microsoft podcasts, Brainstorm. I'm Mary Jo Foley, the editor-in-chief here at Directions, and I'm your host for this series, which is for those interested in the Microsoft Enterprise IT ecosystem and who want to hear our analysts discuss emerging topics on Microsoft's products, services, and most importantly, Microsoft strategies. Brainstorm is your chance to see how the analysts at Directions on Microsoft do what we do. Twice weekly, the analysts hold scope meetings where we talk about the tech news of the week, reports we're working on, and the best ways to deliver the information that our customers need to know. Our goal is to bring you the best insights from the best independent Microsoft watching firm in the business, Directions on Microsoft. Brainstorm is meant to give you a front row seat into one of these scope meetings. Today's roundtable features analysts Jim Gaynor, Wes Miller, and Michael Cherry. As always with Brainstorm, our topic comes from an ongoing back and forth discussion between all the analysts about just what the impact of subscriptions will be on enterprises. That's our topic for this particular episode. Microsoft spent a lot of time and energy, and maybe a lot of its market power over the last few years, converting enterprise customers from perpetually licensed and generally on-premises software to subscription cloud services based on Azure and Microsoft 365. And going into this year, 2024, Microsoft is likely to continue this trend by making it harder and harder to avoid the Microsoft cloud. Microsoft's not alone here. For example, many people no longer own a printer. What they do have is a subscription for ink or toner. If they discontinue this subscription, they are no longer able to print on the printer that they purchase. The printer becomes a boat anchor. Some cars come with features such as heated seats, but only if you pay a subscription for a warm bottom. This makes me happy I'm not a driver, let me just say. As this trend continues, an organization may own very little of its own critical IT infrastructure. So, what is the right way to not just manage IT in the subscription world, but to manage a thriving IT team with necessary services for an organization? All right, let's dive right in. I'm going to ask each panel member to introduce himself when they first answer the question. So, just so everyone, including our listeners, are on the same page, let's make our first question all about quick definitions. Let's talk about what is a perpetual license and what's a subscription license. And let's start with Michael Cherry. If you don't mind, before you answer, Michael, give us a quick self-introduction.
Yes, for those of you who don't know me, I've been with Directions for about 21 years. Prior to that, I worked at Microsoft on the Windows team. And I've been a Windows user since Windows 1.0. Just really enjoy operating systems and how they work and function. That's sort of been my forte. So a perpetual license, perpetual describes a license that once it's paid for in full, allows a customer to use the associated software in perpetuity. Now that really means forever, including after the product has left any kind of support from the manufacturer. So, for example, I still have a copy of MS-DOS. I bought it with a perpetual license. Theoretically, I could still run that and use it today. Now, practically, that doesn't work because I don't own any hardware anymore on which I could actually load that version of MS-DOS. It's on, what were they, 5 1/4 floppy disks? Still have the floppy disks. For some reason, I can't throw anything away. But the reality is I have a perpetual license for MS-DOS that I cannot use. Customers have the option to buy most of Microsoft's on-premises products on a perpetual license basis. And the volume licensing programs, the EA Enterprise and server and cloud enrollments allow you to purchase perpetual licenses. So, that's really what a perpetual license is. In contrast, a subscription describes a license or volume licensing program that grants use rights for a specific time frame and is usually billed on an annual basis. Organizations need to track these subscription terms and expiration dates as they do have time-limited vendor commitments, such as product support contracts, and ensure that the required subscriptions are renewed. So for example, I also have a subscription to Office 365. It's the business premium, the lowest level. I can use that software that comes with that subscription, so the Office products and other services such as Exchange Online and SharePoint Online, for as long as I keep that subscription paid for. So every year I get a bill, I pay that bill, and I continue to have the right to use the software. That grants me the right to use the latest version of that software, which I can download from Microsoft and continue to use. And it gets updated and it's supported for the term of that subscription agreement. Again, you can purchase subscriptions through SA and through the other, excuse me, not through SA, through EA and the other volume programs that exist. Or you can just go out with your credit card actually and go to Microsoft and buy the software and drive your IT department crazy. But the key thing here is any data that I have stored in the cloud under that subscription, when I stop paying for that subscription, I have a very limited window, pun intended, during which I can download my data. Otherwise, that data is going to disappear along with my rights to use the software. So that kind of sets us up for what is a subscription and what is perpetual software.
And we now know your opinion about shadow IT. It's pretty clear. Jim, do you have something to add?
Yeah, I do. Hi, I'm Jim Gaynor. I'll introduce myself later. But I think Michael brought up a really good point early on. He was talking about that 5 1/4 inch floppy that he has on MS-DOS. This is one thing about perpetual software. You can say, oh, I've got the rights to run it. But yeah, I mean, do you have a machine that can run it? Do you have media that can read it? I ran into this back when I was running IT. I came into an organization and they had, oh, we've got all of our data going back forever. And they came to me with these box of tapes that I'm like, do you have a tape drive that can read these? Do you have software that can read this backup format? Do you even have the applications that can read the data? It's not just a matter of having perpetual rights to run a piece of software. It's the whole ecosystem of everything about it, of maintaining the data, the hardware, and all of that, that can effectively make perpetual software and not perpetual. We'll talk about this later, but I just thought that was a really good thing that Michael brought up.
Yeah, that is a good point. Okay, let's move on and talk a bit about the ways that Microsoft's making it harder for people to stay on perpetual software. Wes Miller, tell folks who you are and tell us about a report you wrote about software becoming a service. Also, I'm just wondering, why does everything at Microsoft seem to have to be a service? What are they doing in that vein?
So my name is Wes Miller. I am an analyst who's been at Directions for, 13 and a half years. It's something about the year 13. I'll get to 14 soon. Before that, I worked at a bunch of different companies in Austin, including Winternals, acquired by Microsoft. And prior to that, I worked at Microsoft for 7.5 years, mostly on Windows XP and Windows Server 2003. As Michael was talking about it, a bunch of things hit me. And I think one of the key things to remember is that Microsoft is changing several angles at the same time. They are turning everything into a subscription instead of perpetual software. Most client-side software, they're converting from per device, which was, it's the oldest model that Microsoft has for licensing software. That's basically what they used with IBM back in the day, because it was per the device that you purchased. And on the other side, per user is traditionally used now. And there's benefits to the customer when you go per user, but Microsoft is very much banking on the lock-in that Michael described, the fact that once you're there, you really don't want to quit because of the potential for data loss. So it helps to keep customers forcibly going that direction. And I think that's an important thing. So we see this move. And on the server side, you see a similar thing. And Jim can talk about it as well. We see server technology moving from it used to be licensed on a per host basis. And now it's sometimes licensed per host. But with Azure services, it's often actually licensed a lot of the security services on a per VM basis. So they have a bunch of models that can fit, but the point is, to your question, everything is a subscription. So why subscriptions? we can go back, we hop in our time machine 20 years, and we see Microsoft start up. Michael mentioned software assurance under an EA. And software assurance was, as Michael was actually one of the first people to point out to me, was the original subscription, the OG subscription. And the challenge for Microsoft, for those who don't know, is that basically every 3 years, Microsoft will have customers tee up and they can decide, do we want to keep paying that or not? And the challenge for Microsoft is they get rewarded by pundits and by, of course, shareholders to keep sales revenue growing in a predictable way. And one of the best ways to do that is by converting everything into subscriptions. So subscriptions benefit Microsoft in terms of revenue stability, revenue growth, and they can keep adding on new tiers of service when they need to have a new boost to revenue, which we're seeing pretty much across the board, as you and I have talked about, with things that threaten to become E7. No, there's no word of that yet. Right, Mary Jo, you're right. But that's by and large the direction they're headed, is subscriptifying, my word, subscriptifying everything in order to try and keep revenue constant and growing.
Ooh, subscriptifying. I think we have to make that a thing.
I want to make the whole industry adopt it. Yeah.
Jim, you got something to talk about here?
I know I'm going to keep.
No, it's good.
These.
No, chime in.
Oh, yeah. No. So one thing to the West, I feel kind of alluded to it, is one of the other good things about these subscriptions for Microsoft is they aren't on the new version. It can take them off the new version roller coaster. Their investors, Wall Street, all of these want them to have reliable revenue, right? So if you're not doing a subscription, you've got to convince people to buy a new version of something. Every few years, you've got to convince them that, hey, you've got to buy the new version to keep that regular income going. And to convince them to buy that new version, you've got to add compelling new features. You've got to either give them a carrot or a stick. Mm-hmm. Here's the new features you want, or, oh, that old thing's not compatible anymore. You need the new thing. And if they get you into subscription, they don't have to worry about that roller coaster. They can trickle out new features when they want. They don't have to make these big groundbreaking releases with tons of money spent on PR. They can just keep trickling out new features as they feel like it. And it's a lot easier for them, and they get that regular revenue.
Got it. Michael, would you like to add something here?
Yeah, this subscription software has this other factor to it, which is it's incredibly sticky. Mm-hmm. And if we go back to, the start of the pandemic when we all started to work from home, there were alternative conferencing software that just came to the forefront really quickly. And in fact, Zoom almost became the verb for teleconferencing. Mm-hmm. And people rushed and they purchased it because it was there and it was available and everything else. But now what's happened is, as I look at my subscription, it's sort of like, well, gosh, I'm paying for Teams, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I even stopped looking at them and comparing, is one better than the other? It's just sort of, oh, gosh, I've already paid for Teams. I'm just going to live with it. Mm-hmm. And so people stop. I mean, I just don't shop for software very much anymore, right? I just don't go looking for alternative programs anymore because, for better or worse, I'm paying for something, so I might as well use it.
Right. Got it. That's a good point. And now we're going to talk about Teams with Jim Gaynor. Jim, why don't you tell everyone who you are? And let's talk a little bit about cadence of releases and Teams.
Okay. So, hi, I'm Jim Gaynor. You've heard me babbling already. I've been with Directions. I'm just coming up on my 7-year anniversary, so I'm the junior guy here. And unlike Michael and Wes, I never worked for Microsoft or Amazon or Facebook or those. I've been in the trenches doing IT for large universities and a large engineering company for a while. But I cover Teams. I also cover Windows Server now. And Teams is really a perfect example of the end result when things mm-hmm. do become a full subscription. Because with Teams, you've got no perpetual rights. You know, supported or unsupported, as Michael pointed out, if you stop paying for it, you lose access to the service, you lose access to the data, and that's it. And as long as you're paying, you're on the roller coaster. I mean, you've got no choice but to accept new features or changes in existing features. There is no cadence per se. Mm-hmm. I mean, Like, you know, we were talking on one of our recent calls about how, oh, they just changed some of the UI on how I do my input stuff. We've got the separate camera and the separate microphone button with these drop downs, or the share UI change. That just happens. Mm-hmm. There's no new release that we choose to adopt. It just, here it is, have it.
Yep.
And with these subscriptions, you can only sit on a version for so long. Like the Teams client, for example, if you don't upgrade, you've got it managed at an organizational level so that updates to the client have to happen with approval. If you sit on one for more than 3 months, it'll cease to work with the hosted service. This is a good thing in some ways. You get all the updates, you get the new features, you get the changes. You're not have to, like, oh, I don't have to buy this new version to get the thing. But you get all the updates.
Exactly.
You get all the new features. You get all the changes. I mean, as I mentioned, I used to work at universities with instructional computing, you know, classrooms, and we'd minimize changes during the school year. I mean, summer break for us, everybody kind of assumed, oh, summer break, you guys are taking it easy. No, that was the crazy time for us, because we're struggling to do all the updates, all the upgrades that we need so that we can have a stable environment for the school year, because you don't want to be changing software. You don't want to be changing things in the middle of a semester. You're going to totally screw up somebody's class syllabus. And think about that with this kind of, well, you get the changes no matter what now. You know, in the middle of a semester, suddenly this interface changed. Suddenly we've got this change coming in. That kind of cadence, your options for picking your change windows are minimal.
Right.
And I think a lot of enterprise companies, you know, people who are listening to this, are still used to that older, I mean, there's still this old mindset of viewing the technology you put in place like a toaster, right? You put it there, it just works, let's leave it, it's not going. And between the realities of the modern world of security, but also with how Microsoft is trying to subscriptify everything, you can't. It's a living, breathing beast that you have to maintain, and it forces you to do these things.
Right.
And the cadence, you know, as we would talk about in the days of, oh, here's the update cadence for Windows back in the Windows, you know, 7 days, or here's the update cadence for Windows Server. No, it's continuous change. Mm-hmm. It works for Microsoft in a lot of ways.
Right.
Without having to worry about pushing a new version, they can add new features to things that help them respond to upstarts like Zoom.
Yep.
When Teams was released, to get back to the topic of Teams, it was taking on the challenge of Slack. It was persistent chat in the workplace, right? And then, like, oh, well, Teams is popular, so we'll go ahead and integrate all those Skype features and we'll do all of that. And then the pandemic hit and everybody wanted audio conference, and suddenly you saw this huge focus on enhancing the audio and video conferencing capabilities of Teams so that it could take on this challenge and become, as Michael mentioned, the good enough choice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're hitting on a really interesting dichotomy, because when you talk to Microsoft, they always say customers want all the latest features. They want the continuous innovation, as they call it in the Windows group, right? But then when you talk to customers, you're like, do they though? Like, do they really want to have like 5 feature updates a year? I don't know. Do they?
So there's a fun little anecdote I remember, and this is, you know, it's not Microsoft per se, but wanting the latest, coolest things. Mm-hmm. Is I remember, this is back in the days when Windows Vista was taking forever and Apple was doing all of their I'm a PC, I'm a Mac ads. And I knew some people in my org who came to me. They're like, they like, oh, Macs are cool, I'll buy a Mac, right? And they bought a Mac and they were so unhappy. They were so angry because, of course, it's a totally different operating system, totally different interface. And they were like, well, this is so awful. Why was this so great? And I said, well, what were you expecting? And they basically came down to saying, well, they wanted the Windows that they knew, but cooler and hipper. You know, they want the right. Point being that, yes, I think people do want new features, but they frequently want them in the context of what they already know. Mm-hmm. Give me my same familiar thing, just make it hipper and cooler.
Right. Don't move my cheese. Okay, on that point, let's take a quick break to talk a bit more about what we do here at Directions on Microsoft. First and foremost, despite our name, we are not affiliated with Microsoft. We provide product strategy and licensing information about Microsoft Enterprise products. Among the many services we offer are our regular Microsoft licensing boot camps, meant to help customers new to licensing get up to speed and veterans to refresh their knowledge about Microsoft licensing. We also offer advisory services such as EA negotiation support and Microsoft strategy assessments, where we help you one-on-one with your specific Microsoft product questions and licensing issues. Go to directionsonmicrosoft.com or email info@directionsonmicrosoft.com to learn more about all the services that we offer. Okay, back to our esteemed panel. Now that we understand what subscriptions are and how everything is heading towards being a subscription, let's talk about a natural tendency, fighting the cadence, or trying to stay on perpetual software. Is this really a workable strategy these days? Who wants to go first? This is a good one.
So I'll jump in, Mary Jo.
Okay.
And this is because it's been a real kind of epiphany for me lately, and it's something I've been writing on lately. And I always start with history. It bugs everybody, I think, at Directions, but forgive me, it's me. If you think back to pre-Windows 10, a lot of IT people had a strategy for how they rolled out new versions of Windows. And that was you didn't do it until you got the first service pack, because that's when you knew it was stable. So we had built in for many years this natural tendency to kind of be resistant to taking, you know, being the person who jumped on the first release and rolled it out until you saw how it was going. Mm-hmm. We also had a tendency to do to image machines, which was we would take a machine in a lab, we would set it up the way we absolutely wanted it, then we would make an image of that machine, and then we would stamp that image out onto all the other machines in the company, and that's how we would do it. So that took a fair bit of time to do, and so it created this sort of natural lag. You didn't want to roll out new versions till you're absolutely sure you liked them, and then you rolled them out in a really slow and controlled manner. What happened with Windows 10 is suddenly we were getting updates all the time. We get quality updates every patch Tuesday, so that's once a month, and Microsoft's never been able to discipline itself not to put new features in with patches. So you patch your machine and suddenly something works differently, or there's something that you've never seen before is there. And so at first I had this sort of natural tendency with Windows 10 to kind of want to slow it down. And I realized I couldn't slow it down forever, but I didn't want to go quite as fast as Microsoft wanted me to go. And now I've kind of done a 180 on that, because in today's environment with so much malicious software floating around, and with the way Microsoft has changed how they literally package updates for Windows with new features, you actually are creating a significant risk if you're not staying current with the subscription cadence. Mm. The first risk is that you won't get a patch done in time. And, you know, almost every vulnerability that's found today becomes a zero vulnerability almost overnight. There's somebody who's able to exploit it almost immediately. So when you don't install patches in a timely manner, you're creating this new risk of exposure to ransomware or to some other very serious problem in your company. The second thing is, and I didn't realize this for a long time, the further you get behind in the support window. So right now with Windows, Windows 10 is supported and Windows 11 is supported. But the further you get behind, the harder it is to stay current. The options that you have to do a fast upgrade in place start to disappear. And so, you know, when you start to look at those risks, the risks of increased administration, as well as the risks of exposure to vulnerabilities, it starts to be, the equation really flips to where, yeah, you maybe don't want to be the first person to roll out the Windows updates or the Office updates, but you absolutely don't want to be a laggard, because it starts to become very expensive to catch up.
Jim, got anything to add to this?
Well, you're just picking on me now.
I just know you probably do. So let's go.
Well, it was interesting because I was literally just scribbling down talking about Michael saying that the further you get behind, the harder it is to stay current.
Right.
And one of the things I was thinking about, I'm working on some reporting regarding the next version of Windows Server, Windows Server 2025. And specifically, there's a lot of there's several improvements in Active Directory after a long time of Active Directory not being touched. But if you want to adopt these, I mean, first off, of course, you're going to have to, all your domain controllers are going to have to be Windows Server 2025. But to upgrade your Forest, your Active Directory deployment to this new version, you're going to have to at least be on Windows Server 2016 functional level. And I know there's a lot of orgs out there still on 2008, still on 2012 functional levels. And that ties into what Michael said exactly. I mean, we still have that old model of, well, you know, we'll just put it in place and it's a toaster and then we'll replace the toaster. And yet systems have gotten so much more complicated that it's very difficult to do a complete tear down and replace. Mm-hmm. You have to kind of keep going with these things. You have to keep progressing them. And in this case, that means you've got to bring, even to adopt something new, you've got to bring your older stuff up to a level, a certain base level, so you can jump to the next.
Right.
And I think you're seeing that in Windows Server, you're seeing that in other server applications, you know, as Skype for Business, they talked about it, but other things as well, that you have to have these newer versions, and that's an important thing right there.
Right.
Hey, Wes?
Yeah, well, I think you nailed it, and I appreciate it, because, you know, I wanted to cover the Windows Server aspect, but I think you took care of it more elegantly than I would have. And I think that's a key thing, is that Windows Server and SQL Server are still this monolithic thing that's every, let's say, three-ish years. SQL Server is less stable. But regardless, three-ish years, and they're very monolithic. They require this huge in-place upgrade, et cetera. And I know you're going to cover the Windows Server 2025 stuff in this issue of Update, and I have a peer that'll, you know, pair well with it, which is this one talking about these pieces of on-premises technology and their cloud counterparts that are services, and how the on-prem ones, particularly Windows Server, are these very slow cadence, but at least it's still supported. And then I have two other pieces, which are Configuration Manager and Endpoint Protection, which are not. They are now twice a year, down from three. Used to be way more adventurous than that, but like everything else, Microsoft's ambition was bigger than the reality. And I think that's important, because they've even pulled back the throttle a little bit, realizing it doesn't make sense for them to ship with that velocity because customers aren't able to keep up. And it's, I think a lot of customers have adopted the same attitude Michael has, which is, we want to stay as close as we can because we see this pain when we actually get behind. And then when we start looking at the hosted services variants of these, part of the beauty of them, if you could actually switch to them mostly or primarily, is that they are largely, quote, self-updating. That is, Microsoft takes care of the updates for you, so there's a benefit to them. And that's also, of course, that double-edged sword, that's why it's a subscription, because you don't get to sit still. It's Microsoft's terms on when you must move forward to that new technology. So it's customers can try to fight the cadence, but the reality is, between more rapid shipment of on-prem or even less frequent in certain cases, and then the cloud-based rapid rollout of these services, Microsoft is pulling everyone kicking and screaming towards a cloud cadence, whether they want it or not.
And there is still, just to reiterate that, there's the security aspect of it as well, that security threats are just so much more now. And while we all know that you're like, well, you know, I applied the patches and nothing happened. Like, well, yes, that's the idea. But then I applied this patch and it went bad, and suddenly, you know, so now patches are bad. Well, so you took an active thing and a problem resulted from that. But there's just so much out there that's coming after attacks, and the risk of what happens if you don't apply a patch and your company is exploited, you can't ignore these now.
Right. Right. It's like when every time we hear of a cloud outage, you know, something goes wrong with Azure, something goes wrong with Microsoft 365. And then you see people saying, see, this is why I don't want to go with the cloud. Guys, come on. Like, yeah. It's not a real reason. Like, could you do better? Maybe. I doubt it, though. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's sum things up and say, if you're talking to customers and others, what do you say to them when it comes to thinking from a strategic perspective about subscriptions? Are they inevitable? Is it just an excuse for lock-in? Or is there really a good reason that they should be going all in on subscriptions? Who wants to start with that one?
You know, I have two things. I'll jump in. I have two things about subscriptions that I think from a strategic perspective you should be looking at. And they're a little bit weird, but the first one is that you need to be absolutely, for the products that you're looking at that you care about, you need to be looking at the previews that are available. And in the Windows case, there's a thing called the Canary Channel, which is sort of the earliest look you can take at it. And someone in an organization has to be looking at these early releases that are made to insider channels, if you will, so that people can at least have some idea what might be coming their way and be thinking about it. And then the second thing I have is a really weird one. And again, it's going to really, people will know how old I am when I talk about this. But back in the days of mainframes, when we bought software for the mainframes, we often negotiated what was called source code escrow. And that was that we had the right to the source code should the manufacturer be unable to support it going forward because we relied on it so much. And you think, well, what do you really mean by that, Michael? And it's sort of like, well, you might be on a product that Microsoft has in their arsenal on-prem, and that product is starting to not get a lot of love, I'll say. And so one that comes to mind is like BizTalk, or I think it's called Host Integration Server, which is the 3270 emulation tool. I don't know how much longer Microsoft's really going to care about these products, but if they're important to you and you're using them on-prem, the next time you come around with your EA agreement, you might want to start seeing if you can push Microsoft that should they stop those products and you still need them for a period of time, that they have to give you the source code and make the source code available to you. Now, I want to be very clear. You don't want the source code because your people probably can't maintain it. But at least it gives you a little bit of an insurance policy. But those are just the two weird things I'm thinking about with subscriptions, which is you've got to be watching what's happening. Somebody has to have the responsibility of watching what's happening. And then somebody has to be watching the products that are just not getting any attention anymore.
You're making me think of I'm going to call it a Wes-ism. You know what I'm going to say, Wes, I think, you always say this, and I think it's a great point, is if Microsoft's not investing in a product, you shouldn't invest in it either. And that applies to things like Michael's talking about with BizTalk and Host Integration Server, right?
It definitely applies to those two. In fact, it's funny to call them out specifically because I bet, you know, 99% of people don't even know that Microsoft makes those products anymore, that Microsoft
right.
made a thing called yeah. Commerce Server that they basically silently spun off to a partner who was willing to keep it going, kind of like people have with IBM's OS2. And I think that's a key thing, that Microsoft is investing less and less in these on-prem products, like you'll see in this report I've got coming out this month. And customers have to not just acknowledge, but stay mindful of these products, that I'm getting less and less every year from Microsoft for this thing that it probably costs more than it did 3, 5, 10 years ago, but you're paying more for it and actually getting less and probably less life cycle out of it versus the cloud tier that they often have in these technologies. So that's what people have to really stay mindful of, is am I licensing the best bang for my buck? And is it just time for me to go to the cloud services instead?
Mm-hmm. Can I throw out one more thing here?
You can.
While we're talking about, you know, bucking the tide, you know, that whole thing. You know, Microsoft is, of course, a company. They exist for profit. They don't exist for the good of the universe. And so to a certain extent, they're happy to do that for you. And that's where we talk about ESUs, which we're seeing for older versions of SQL Server. We're seeing for old, right now it's SQL Server 2012 and Windows Server 2012 and 2012 R2. So they'll find ways to let you keep using those old versions. But again, they're either using it as a carrot to bring you into subscriptions, like, oh, you get them for free, no additional cost, if you go into Azure and take those into Azure VMs, or if you adopt Azure Stack HCI, which is our subscription OS, or you can pay us a lot, the whole cost of the annual license over again. They're going to make their money either way. But you can do that. They're happy to enable that. But even then, there are all these other things we've talked about apply, all these other things we've talked about in terms of, you know, do you have hardware to support it, the whole ecosystem around it, and the security issues. Even these extended security updates don't cover everything. Mm-hmm. So Microsoft's not investing in it. You really want to run it. And they say, sure, you can keep running it, but you're not getting it perpetually. If you want to know that it's supported in some organizations operate in regulatory environments where they're required to run things that are held under active support, you're going to pay more for it, and it's still going to go away eventually.
Yeah, I think that's the thing I was going to specifically call out, is that even with ESUs, the best you get is a four-year stay. So at this point, that's all Microsoft has ever offered, is 4 years of extended yeah. support. So customers really have to keep that in mind. All you're doing is asking for a few more shots at the green.
You're kicking the can down the road, and eventually you're going to come up against this big barrier, and there's going to be a whole bunch of cans waiting for you.
All right. I love it. That's a great way to end this part of the discussion. And now we're going to take one more quick break, and then we're going to talk about our customer question and our hot buttons of the week. So I want to talk a bit more about our licensing boot camps. Directions Bootcamp is the fastest way to ensure your company gets the most for your Microsoft dollar and stays compliant. The next virtual boot camp is March 11th to 15th, and then there's going to be another in-person boot camp in Atlanta from May 21st to 23rd. I had a chance to attend the Atlanta boot camp last year, and I can say this training offers the most up-to-date and comprehensive way for those new to licensing and old hats to get familiar with new rules. For more information, go to directionsonmicrosoft.com/get-training or contact sales at directionsonmicrosoft.com. Okay, now let's field a customer question that we actually recently received at Directions. We're going to keep customer names and locations out of this. An enterprise customer contacted Directions with a question that is on theme with today's discussion. We've actually had this question twice in the last several months. Both Directions customers asked, is Places still in preview? Places is something Microsoft, I think, announced a couple years ago at Ignite. And so that brings up the whole issue. Where is it? And should customers even put any reliance at all when a product is in preview? I know Jim Gaynor has a lot to say about this.
So Places was announced in October of 2022. To a whole lot of fanfare back when hybrid work was the thing. Remember, we're talking about how great hybrid work before AI became the thing that everybody talks about all the time. And it's supposed to help you track where you are in the buildings and hot desk and make sure that you come into the office at a time when your colleagues are there and find meeting spaces where both the on-premises people and the people working from home can all get together best, all of that stuff. And people got really excited about it. And Microsoft said when they announced it, hey, it will be available in 2023. Crickets. Crickets. It is in private preview right now, still. They amended, they stealth edited the blog posting to say it will be available in private preview in 2023. So we know there's a private preview going on, but there's been no additional information or anything. And a lot of companies were looking at this as a solution because that this was a pain point for them. It still is. How do they get all their people in? And yeah, there's the product specific thing, but what it comes down to is companies started making very, very concrete plans about a product that Microsoft had announced, but never actually existed. There wasn't even a public preview. And I think really that this is to the point here. You shouldn't be making business plans on something when Microsoft does not have a public preview, and sometimes even when they've committed to a release date. You have to go with that, especially something that's brand new. It's one thing where it's like, oh, hey, it's Windows Server. Oh, hey, it's this, where they've got a cadence. Okay, so maybe it's delayed 6 months, but you know they're going to come out with a new version of it. But something new like this, I mean, we didn't write about it because there was nothing, there was no there yet.
Right.
We try to write about things that are concrete that we can point to our customers about. And that's one of the challenges with certain kinds of previews. Now, other kinds of previews, and I'm sure that Michael and Wes are about to talk about these, you do have to keep an eye on because you know they're coming. It's an established product. It's when you start talking about the new products, it's worrisome. And I'm going to yield the floor because I see them chomping at the bit.
Wes?
Yeah, I think yes, Jim, you're right. Champing at the bit. And I think that's the you're absolutely right. And I thought it was interesting as you're talking about this one, because in the AAD realm, I saw a similar one, a feature that people were really excited about, which was a tiny replication thing from cloud back to on-premises. And people were very excited to see this announced. And then Microsoft very quietly just sort of undid it. And it was because they have a new model for how you synchronize between on-premises and the cloud with the directories. And the new feature didn't jive with where they were going with the new synchronization models. And so they said, yeah, we decided we're not going to do that. And so it undid a lot of goodwill and a lot of excitement the customers already had. So I think it's both important to keep track of what Microsoft has as far as little featurettes or things that are coming. But also you do, as Michael was sort of alluding to, you have to be keeping track of those previews yourself, but don't bet the farm on one of those features shipping until you actually see it out the gate and available for like 6 months. Don't make that feature something that you're betting the entire organization on.
Michael?
And I just wanted to sort of joke that Microsoft doesn't have perpetual products anymore. It has perpetual previews.
They do. I know some of the, I just wrote about this on our blog.
Yeah.
Like some of these previews, they go on for like years, not just like one or two, but like three or four. And at that point, if it's past 18 months, it's probably not going to happen, right? It's just going to be quietly edited out of the blog post.
Yeah. And people might even think we're joking a little bit, but I think the best example I can think of is Azure Blueprints, which was a service that literally never left preview. It was in preview for something like 5 years, maybe even six. And every time we would do a new update to the Azure roadmap, I would go check because this time it's got to be real. And then I went out on a whim to check it the other day and no, it's gone. It'll be disappeared soon.
And they've been on a tear with that for a while lately. Since I'd say late 2022 is when it really started to kick in. Like a lot of these things that have been in preview for a long time are now getting actively pruned, or things where they had overlap between multiple services, multiple subscription services that overlapped but still fit particular niches. They're picking one winner and culling out the loser. And if you, as a customer, are on the one that they decided is the loser, you've got to figure out a way to move, which goes back to, it's a more negative connotation, but it still goes back to the, you've got to be aware of what's going on of like, okay, so you've got this one subscription that you really, really like, but there's another product that Microsoft has that overlaps in that space. And then maybe something happens, as Wes talked about, where, well, the way that the other product does, dovetails more nicely with something else they're doing that's more strategic. And so your product of choice gets left in the dust. You need to be aware of that so that you aren't caught flat-footed by the discontinuation of yours. And with subscriptions, there's no like, well, I'll just sit on it until it dies. Well, you know, Microsoft can give you 1 year notice that it's killing a service. They've been more generous. But they can just go down to 1 year on that with the policies that they've announced.
That's true.
And less if it's in preview. If it's in preview, it doesn't, none of that applies.
Right. Okay. Let's do a quick round robin round here of hot buttons. So this is what we do in our scope meetings at the end. If anyone wants to talk about things they're working on, things have caught their eye out there in the tech news world, or even something that's not tech news. It's all fair game for the hot button. So let's each talk about a hot button that you've got right now going on.
I'll jump in. I'm wondering if it's possible to create a list. And this kind of ties on what we're doing today. What are the real things? And I mean by real things, they're legitimately barriers to getting rid of all of your on-premises. So what is it about maybe Exchange Online that you still need to keep an Exchange server? What are the things that keep you having to have an infrastructure, and are they legitimate, or is it just that we're clinging to the old on-prem stuff?
Right, because there used to be a kind of an agreed upon list, I feel like, that everybody would say, well, it's because of government regulation, it's because of certain policies in our company. And now when you ask people, why do you still want to run Exchange Server on-prem? Some have reasons still, but a lot of them are like, well, that's how we always did it. Right.
Yeah.
And we're going to keep doing it.
The worst part of Exchange is that so much of it still comes down to identity replication. And I wish they could kill off Exchange Server, but there's a lot of loose ends there still.
Mm-hmm. But that's the thing, Wes, to find the ones that are really legitimate like that. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So that we and customers can legitimately look at this list and say, yep, here's the things. Here's what we're waiting for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for me, you know, it's hard to claim to be the curmudgeon here, but I'm going to do it at this moment in time. I think the thing that has me most curmudgeonly as I sit here and wait to find out if I do have jury duty next week or not is the fact that so many people are so excited about, quote, AI, and there's so much energy and PR spin about, well, Copilot too, but just AI in general as being the saving grace for everything. And I'm really worried that large organizations are betting too much on this as something that can save them money. And they're going to be throwing good money after bad in order to make this a thing and creating more security and compliance problems for themselves, as well as having something that doesn't work down the road. So that's my hot button of the day.
I saw a really good observation about AI, and not saying that it doesn't have good things. It's AI is not good enough to do your job, but it's good enough to convince your executives that it can. And that's a really scary thing when you think about it, and that you want to make sure you really have good information on the decisions you make. My hot button's a bit more applied, just because I've been spending a lot of time lately jumping into what's going on with the Windows Server 2025 and also Azure Stack HCI. The new version of that just went GA. And one thing I'm kind of realizing is we saw this back when they came out with Windows Server 2022. Shortly after that, they're like, okay, we're killing the semi-annual channel. We're just going to service this on the LTSC. And we're like, okay, Windows Server is simple again, right? It's simple again. It's just kind of, there's Windows Server, and then they're going to have stuff with Azure Stack HCI. But now you look now, and we're kind of back to all these multiple versions again. You've got Windows Server 2025 is coming. Yay, cool. That's nice. Azure Stack HCI, oh, that's released annually, and a lot of new things come out on that. And now we've got Azure Edition, which is this version that gets some features earlier, and it's only for running on VMs in Azure hosting, whether it's in Azure VMs or it's on Azure Stack HCI or in Azure Stack Hub. And then just at the end of last year, here's the Windows Server annual channel for container host. It's a version of Windows Server, server core only, specifically for hosting containers. And I mean, I've got to be honest. Customers, if you're out there and you're really betting heavily on Windows Server containers, send me a line. I'd love to hear it, because most of the stuff in containers I'm hearing is Linux. But Windows Server annual channel for containers is specifically to have a version of Windows Server for hosting containers that lines up with the Kubernetes update cadence. And so now we've got four versions of Windows Server technology again. Different update cadences, different ways that it goes. I'm like, it just got all complicated again. And I'm trying to make sense of all of this and help our customers make sense of it.
No, and add flighting to this too, right? Now you can flight Windows servers.
Well, yeah, that's something else too. I talk about the subscriptification of it. You've got, there's features in Windows Server 2025, the hot patching that they're talking about. Oh, by the way, you need to get an additional subscription on top of whatever you're paying. However you're licensing Windows Server, you have to pay an extra subscription if you want hot patching.
Right.
It's like, oh, so we're subscriptifying it more.
Yeah.
So I just, again, trying to make sense of all of that has been my hot button and watching, like, what are you guys doing?
Wes?
I think, you know, you nailed it there, Jim. It's always, thank you for covering Windows Server so Michael and I don't have to anymore. But I think you nailed it. And it's important for customers to also look at that pragmatically. I'd like to know that answer too. Is anyone actually using Windows Server containers? Because to this day, I have still not had one question about them that was actually a question. It was a question about what it really is. At the licensing boot camps, it's very similar to SQL Server on Linux. And the only time we've ever gotten a question was once at a boot camp about that, which was someone trying to run it on AWS without paying for Windows Server. So basically they were trying to use it as an end round Microsoft's own licensing. So and there's a lot of stuff the company will talk about, but won't actually use.
And I'll say for our listeners that the people we deal with are really large enterprise customers. So, you know, you're a small startup doing, you know, very internal stuff. Those aren't the people that come to our licensing boot camps. Just people who are going to say, but I, yeah.
All right.
And I just want to have the last word by saying that I know that AI is real, Wes, because Microsoft put an AI key on the keyboard.
Oh, that's a very good point. You are absolutely right. Thank you.
All right, guys, thank you so much. That was a lot of fun. I really enjoy hearing these brainstorm podcasts, and I hope our listeners do too. I want to remind our listeners they can find a lot more coverage of all things Microsoft related on directionsonmicrosoft.com. Thank you for listening. If you have questions, comments, or any topics you would like to hear the directions analysts cover in one of these kinds of podcasts, please do not hesitate to contact me via Twitter at Mary Jo Foley. And speaking of Twitter, or X, I'm never calling it X, we at Directions have converged our existing channels into a single platform. Give us a follow at DirectionsMSFT for all the latest enterprise Microsoft product and licensing information. Thanks again.